call the Monday, December 1st Committee of the Whole meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Nandy.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderwoman Evans is excused. Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderwoman Mayer.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. We don't have a citizens' comment period at Committee of the Whole. We have a quorum, so we'll go to item two, request from Dave Bartles and Rositsa Bartashevich for the city to locate, design, and build a minimum of 8 tennis courts and 2 mini tennis courts. I'll leave that alone. Adjacent to one another in a single cluster layout within a city park to provide adequate tennis facilities for city residents as recommended in the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan. Ms. Bartashevich. Mr. Bartles. Welcome. Thank you. Please provide us your names and addresses for the record, and then proceed as you wish.
Rositsa Bartashevich, 8324 South 68th Street.
David Bartles, 8489 Golden Lake Court.
Thank you all for the opportunity this evening regarding the proposal to address the tennis needs for the community. A lot of time, thought, and research has gone into the proposal this evening. Respectfully, what we are requesting is that the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan be amended with respect to the tennis facilities and that the city locate, design, and build a minimum of 8 tennis courts and 2 mini courts adjacent to one another in a single cluster layout within the city, within a park, to provide adequate tennis facilities for the city residents. According to what we can see in the Comprehensive Parks Report, the plan already does acknowledge the need for 10 courts in the city of Franklin, so thank you for recognizing the deficit. The plan currently does not call for these courts to be aggregated in a cluster, but rather placed sporadically throughout the city. There are many advantages to adding 8 full-size courts minimally, and 2 mini courts in a cluster within one location. First of all, it would provide a quality, centrally located complex for the city residents of all ages, allowing for larger instructional opportunities and match play with multiple matches playing simultaneously. This is a sport that requires far fewer people to utilize the facilities than one baseball field. It's a very quiet sport and can literally be used by individuals of all ages, beginners as well as seasoned players. It would provide the high school tennis programs with a place to finally hold tennis matches and tournaments with other schools. Students currently practice at Tuckaway, often splitting up the team to other locations, including the Greendale Community Center, Village Club, and courts near the library. It's extremely challenging logistically for the already large demands on the mostly volunteer coaching staff, and the high school currently has to play all of its matches outside of Franklin at the Greendale Village Club and Community Center, and they also must pay to rent the Tuckaway courts for use as well as the facilities in Greendale. It'll enhance the Parks and Recreation Department's tennis programs, again for people of all ages, and allow for either greater participation or better quality of participation with more courts to utilize. Youth participation and interest in rec department programs is very robust and grew by 47% from 2013 to 2014. You should have all received a handout, one that is entitled the Franklin Youth Participation. There were 175 children from ages 5 on up that signed up this year. That's compared to 119 that participated last year. It would also give us the ability to host non-school related tournaments, camps, exhibitions, enhance the overall image of Franklin, and finally offer this community what all other surrounding communities offer to their residents, a cluster of courts in one location. Please also see the additional handout that you should have received in advance that it illustrates the tennis court offerings in 12 other communities surrounding Franklin. What I'd like you to take particular note of is that Franklin is the only community that does not have what we're asking for this evening, which is an aggregated or cluster arrangement of courts in one central location. Many cities also do offer more than one cluster of courts for their residents. Obviously, something we've mentioned before is that tennis is a quiet sport. It's less noise impact than softball, baseball, soccer, and potentially could lower maintenance costs, especially time or labor, versus having courts scattered at numerous locations around the city. If you take a look at the youth participation handout, there's information there as well that takes a look at the high school participation. This does illustrate how incredibly robust the Franklin High School tennis program is. Using last year's full year statistics for boys and girls teams, there were 100 students that signed up for tennis. The varsity football team is between 55 and 60 students. The girls team alone was 58 girls. That alone is the size of a football team. The participation in tennis at Franklin High School is consistently one of the highest in the area, despite no courts to support the program. The high school simply has run out of space to be able to have tennis courts on campus, and the only alternative is to pay to rent courts in Greendale, the Village Club Community Center, as well as tuck away for practices and matches. The second handout also shows the number of courts in the surrounding communities. Looking at all the communities up to a 30-mile radius, Franklin is the only community that does not have at least one aggregated location for courts available for both community and school use. It does rank dead last. With only 10 courts in the city that are publicly available, Franklin is at the bottom of all cities documented. While Cudahy has 9 public courts, they still would rank higher than Franklin because at least they do have a cluster of courts in one location. This statistic thereby makes Franklin's courts far less usable for recreational needs, whether the needs be instructional, competitive, or social. This prompts our youth and adult citizens to go to Greendale to use their facilities and meet their recreational desires. To summarize, the request is for the City of Franklin and the Parks Commission and Franklin School District to potentially work together to provide for community and student needs within the city. With a little caveat there, we are not here on behalf of the school district, just making a recommendation for discussion. It is our understanding that the city has impact fees that potentially could be used to fund part of the cost of this request. If our understanding is correct, there are impact fees that need to be used by the end of 2015. So the timing seems to be right for this request, and hopefully prompt decision making and progress towards securing land and development in the near future.
Sure. We've had discussions, or a couple informal meetings with Dr. Patz of the school district, and they've expressed an interest in participating with this plan, with this idea. Limited role, perhaps, but bottom line, net is we think it's a great opportunity for the city, the residents group here, and the school district to kind of work together and see if we can make this become a reality. Again, preliminary discussions, but things such as perhaps participating in maintenance costs, providing bleachers, that kind of thing is something that they'd be willing to consider. They'd love a seat at the table should we move forward with the plan with the city and see how we can work together on that kind of thing. So Rosita and I and others would be happy to be part of that, to help facilitate, work together. We think it's a great opportunity for, and we all know the past, you guys always haven't seen eye to eye, but we think this is a great time to get both factions together and work together on this project.
I think the nice thing with this is that the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan already does recognize the deficit in this community as compared to other communities in a community this size, that there are already 10 courts shy in this area. And what we are asking, though, is not that you modify what you already recognize as a deficit, but perhaps consider modifying the way that it is in there instead of sporadically placing the courts throughout the community, making them far less usable, and not addressing the recreational needs of the community, to put them all in one location so that they can be more used by all.
Okay.
Comments, questions?
Because I sit in the middle chair, I get to speak first. Actually, people require that I speak first. Thanks for coming in. I did know in our discussions as well that almost exclusively multiple court locations are always at the high school. I just wonder out loud why this need hasn't been considered by the school district when they went on the major building campaign started a few years ago. That's a rhetorical question. I don't think anybody in the room has an answer to that. But it does come to mind. And I think we talked about this. The reason the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, in my view, has the courts scattered is to allow for other neighborhoods to have tennis courts as well, as opposed to the concept of a clustered tournament ready group of courts, which, as we look down the chart, it looks like in all communities, they have lots of courts scattered and only one cluster, generally, at the high schools. I'm going to ask for other input and questions. Alderman Schmidt.
So these courts, then, their primary purpose will be to facilitate the high school athletes?
That's incorrect. It would be for the community. It would be for everyone allowed to use it. And if I may make a comment back to Mayor Olson's observation.
Go ahead.
Basically, when you take a look at many of the other high schools, most other high schools, we are an outlier that our high school doesn't have it, but the city is also an outlier that we don't have aggregated courts, period. And whether or not the courts are provided on high school land, as in most of the other communities, there is definitely a community benefit. When the high school is not using it, the community is available to use it. When the community is not using it, the high school uses it. There's a symbiotic relationship there. Waukesha, for example, they've got 16 at the Woyan Complex. Both Waukesha South High School does not have any courts, neither does Catholic Memorial. That is something that they work out an arrangement where the high school is then able to utilize 8 of the courts for each of the high schools for their own purposes, and when that is occurring, then there's an arrangement that the public doesn't have access to them during specified hours during that arrangement. So the other comment on high school versus community provided, when you do take a look at neighborhoods such as Greendale, they provide above and beyond what's at the high school. They also provide for public use at the community center. So that does happen in many other cities as well. And the funding source, let's be honest, regardless of whether it be the school district or the city, it's the taxpayer. The taxpayer provides for that funding one way or the other. And we cannot address or make any kind of change at this point in time at the high school with the fact that it is landlocked. The last amount of remaining land that potentially could have been used needed to accommodate a softball field for girls because that was a potential infringement of Title IX. So they needed to provide for that and make use of that space.
Is 8 basically the standard number of courts that are needed to come for high school meets, some stuff that...
It is the minimum standard.
So all the events are held simultaneously?
Correct. There's limited hours during of daylight hours, particularly in the fall, so that it can be done by roughly 7 o'clock in the evening. And, you know, living in Wisconsin, the temperatures do get kind of cold in October after 7 p.m., if not earlier. So 8 is really the minimum. The other thing I would like to mention as well is that this is not by any means could this be construed as just an arm of the high school or something just for high school, too many courts. If there should also have been a photo in your packets of what mini courts look like, to give you an example, to address the very large number of 5 to 10-year-olds that sign up for tennis through the rec department program. These courts are very strongly encouraged and supported by the United States Tennis Association because they provide for a scaled-down version of an adult or full-size court for kids to be able to become acclimated. It is proportionate to their size and encourages perhaps better success early on in the sport so that they can continue. And by no means can that be used by adults or for competitive play or anything like that. So
where am I going to play?
Is there any... thoughts about wanting to eventually have them lighted like the Greendale Community Center courts?
My research has shown that very, very few courts are lighted because, again, typically in Wisconsin during the playing months after 9 p.m. in the summer, people aren't going to be playing anyway typically. It is an added cost and expense. I do have cost breakdowns and estimates, so the money would be better spent going into additional courts than for the lighting. The vast majority of courts don't have lights, and they're usable.
And the trade-off as far as what kind of expenses are incurred right now when renting the facilities, like at the Greendale Village Club or the Tuckaway, and would that be a trade-off as far as investing into the maintenance of our own courts?
We did bring that up to the school district when in our meetings with Dr. Patz, and that was something that he would certainly be willing to apply and come to discuss. The costs are not excessive, to be honest. They are minimal, but it's a cost nonetheless, and it's the principle of the fact that we simply don't provide that in our community.
What's the estimate of construction cost, David?
For the courts, for 8 courts, it's between $400,000 to $500,000, roughly $50,000 to $60,000 per court.
I was going to start asking assumptions. I see the city engineer over here going, what does that mean? Alderwoman Willowen.
Well, we should be able to tell it because we just built 2 at Pleasant View. So we should have that cost of what.
Did we build them?
Yeah, they're done. Yeah. Which brings me to a couple other issues about that. But I guess the first one, I just need to be very sensitive to the issue about having an item in the 3rd District on the agenda without notice. I didn't find out about it until after. So, Mayor, if when things are going to be on the agenda for the 3rd District, if I could get a little heads up, that'd be appreciated. This was before the Parks Commission, and they originally were asking for the Pleasant View Park area, and I listened very patiently, but finally had to say I could not support that. But it came into the packet still mentioning that, which lit up my phones. And
I have a little bit of clarification on that, if that will help you.
That's fine. It's fine.
No, I think it's important, if I may.
Okay, go ahead.
I had asked about that as well, because that's not where the request is at currently.
Okay.
And what I was told in regard from Oren on that topic was that that's how the request originally came. It seemed like a logical place to start for us because it's the most current park that's being developed. So he felt it was important to include that information for Pleasant View because that's how it originated as a suggestion.
Okay.
But because now it's evolved, what was more important, because I was concerned about that as well, because that's not where the request is currently. The request is currently for this. So the top at the heading of that document for the committee of the whole does have, it doesn't mention Pleasant View in there. So if that helps you at all.
Yeah.
I tried to get that to be changed, but it wasn't.
I know, you wouldn't believe how I had frantically put out fires and emails, and it caused a lot. So maybe, Joel, if you could have Oren discuss that with me, if he's going to do that, then at least I can head it off before it starts. That would be really helpful, because I had a pretty full agenda to go through without having to do that. Something that someone can tell me maybe outside of this later on is a little bit of the history between the Park and Rec Department and the City Park Commission, because I think that happened right about the time I just started to get involved in Franklin, and so it's obviously been more than 14 years ago that took place, so probably not for discussion here. The district to work together was one of your comments, and I can support that, and I guess we need to find out what roles those would be. One of the things that I thought about, does the school have any land they could donate? Because a donation to the city can match an impact fee for land. And so that would be, be able to get you there a lot quicker, provided that is what the city wants to, cluster courts. And I can certainly see why you would want to cluster courts because of, how it's played and that. But it's also an individual sport, so I can also see why individual neighborhoods would want to just walk out the door and go down and play tennis as well. So it's kind of a little bit of a balance on how do we still accommodate the neighborhood, how do we do that, and what's the school's role, and what are they willing to put in on that, I think will go a long way in the decision. And then as far as the comment about impact fees are available, yes, they always need a match. And that match is not always a 50-50. And I don't know where we're at. I think we're kind of caught up right now as far as what has to be spent versus given back if it's not used because of the Kayla's crew project that's on the table, and the Pleasant View project, which consumed a fair amount of it already because that park's not developed. So I guess questions would be, what are the impact fee needs that have to be spent in a certain time? What is the school district willing to put forward? And if that's enough satisfaction to convince the council, we should move from the current park plan to a cluster? Or do we try to accommodate both, you know, for people? So I guess that's where I'm still at. And I did offer to help you with grants previously when we were at the Park Commission. Mm-hmm. I still would do what I could on that if you wanted to, you know, look at that.
What we're looking for, what Dave and Rosita are looking for, and what needs to happen for this to move anywhere would be tomorrow night to refer this back to the Parks Commission with the request that they look at the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan for an amendment to accommodate. And then it would start this.
Well, I think also, I think the important role would be to have some city, have some communication with the school district, or at least the residents, do they have any land available? I mean, that would probably go a long way.
We had some conversation with them, and we're being told they do not have any additional land that they could donate for this project.
What was the acreage you said you would need for that? I know I read it.
For this layout, about 3 acres is what's necessary. So school district land, approximately, they only own 2 additional parcels of land. It's not vast quantities, as I believe that some people in the Parks Commission were under the understanding. There are 2 parcels of land that they own, and they are both needed for potential expansion opportunities. One is an 8-acre parcel over by Ben Franklin, and another is a 20-acre parcel off of 76th Street, somewhere in the vicinity of Croatian Park. But both of those are necessary and unable to be used.
They used to have one off of Highway 100.
There was a parcel, yeah.
Yeah, they sold it?
Yes. I got to keep track of city stuff. I can't even describe.
Yeah, I know.
If it's our understanding correctly, is the first step is to get this plan changed, the corp changed to accommodate the request. Then I think at that point would be the logical time and the best time to get the school district involved. I don't want to start wasting everybody's time if this gets voted down. I don't know if that happens tomorrow, or it's going to go back to Parks, then back for a vote. But I don't think we want to waste your time, Parks' time, the district's time until we can all agree this makes sense, this is a great idea, works for the community, it's not just a school project. Then at that point, and maybe we'll get better answers if we get all the right people in the room at the same time, instead of, again, we're not here speaking on behalf of the school district. We have no affiliation whatsoever with them. So I guess we want to make sure we understand the flow. We went to Parks, they said come here, we're here, we're going to be back tomorrow, hopefully it goes back to Parks, then it goes back here.
Well, we can make it look like a real nice volley. The reality is this Parks Commission has to be told to modify the comprehensive outdoor, and that would happen ostensibly tomorrow night. Well, you still have the floor.
Well, I just I wanted to kind of hear from everyone else, because residents that contacted me when they were thinking it was going into Pleasant View said kind of the same thing about when you first initially started as, why isn't the school district taking up the need for this? So I just want you to be aware that will be a concern. I know it's probably a concern of some of the members up here. And we have our budget, and so it's kind of.
But the thing to keep in mind is that this is not a project solely for their utilization and their purposes. This is something to meet all of the residents' needs. High school kids are included as residents, and it would meet their needs as well, correct. But it would also meet the needs of grade schoolers, adults, young adults, old adults, middle-aged adults, all people in this community. So, and the funding source really still is, as I mentioned before, you know, the taxpayer. You had mentioned, you know, impact fees and dollars. My understanding, and if we're understanding this correctly relative to impact fees, is that the funding source has to be from other budgets to be able to match with impact fees, and some clarification is welcome at that. However, my understanding also from the Comprehensive Recreation Plan in Chapter 7, there is a plan for a Southwest park in this community on the Southwest. It's in there. And what it does call for, also,
it's not our document, it's yours.
Yeah. So we're happy that you're looking for another 200-acre park, of which we're looking for approximately 3 acres to meet this need in the Southwest Park. My understanding, again, on that component, some research has shown that the land was supposed to have been purchased this year, but that got pushed off into next year. So if that land was purchased by other funds, impact fees could be brought on board to match that. Is that correct?
Depends. If we don't
see
have
a nod.
We don't have the right people to answer that question.
I'm hoping an attorney is a good...
I'd like to thank the city attorney. No.
Yes.
I would like you to please consider that as an option that also does already call for 4 courts, so the amendment would be add minimally additional 4 to that, plus the 2 mini courts. So it sounds like we have some opportunity. The land is supposed to abut what's Franklin Park right now, that is county park land.
Yeah, it's a state natural area.
So correct.
That would be what the county want, that, you know, so that... We might want to consider looking at some land that's already for sale or something rather than
putting
up against the state natural area.
I think that was the plan. Correct me if I'm wrong, that Southwest Park would abut the county land, and it would be 200 acres with the county land not being usable because of the DNR component and the natural reserve, that the other 200 acres would be then for recreational needs, parking, et cetera.
I know, some conservation land that was given to us by the waste management.
Well, let's just say that 200-acre park was a dream. And as you know, the vote on that comprehensive outdoor recreation plan was 5-1. Who was that one, and why? Let's let Alderman Dander have a kick at the cat.
Yeah. Well, you guys are coming with a great idea. The city does need something for the people. I'm concerned about the location and where it would be located in regards to egress. Right now, we've only got one road that goes in to the Pleasant View area. And we've just widened that road, not even to a real road, but widened it to be able to get what we want to into that facility and put a parking lot in there. You know, so that's a hidden facility back in there where, you know, we talk about why did the city have scattered sites. The city has scattered sites as the development occurred in these communities. The new builders, the homeowners, had to pay an impact fee. And as we grew out of the center, parks became available, land became available as a requirement to the new development. So now we want to locate this in the center of a city that is very difficult to get to. So I'd be concerned about the location, the maintenance of it, I do have a question and a concern with the school district, because right now the Park and Rec Department is operated through the school system and not the city. So revenues generated, usage fees to maintain the facilities. These are concerns and questions that I have. Hey, go back to parks, okay? Let's get the okay for a change in the ordinance, and then let's get answers to these questions, okay? Yes, can the city, can the school district work together to get something accomplished for the citizens? I would like to hope so, okay? But make sure you got all the answers for us. Okay.
Well, one comment on Pleasant View Park. That seemed to be the path of least resistance and also a path to get something sooner rather than later. So that was why that initial proposal to the Parks Committee was made for Pleasant View Park, because it's currently underway. Location seemed nice and convenient, and new construction, that it could be modified. So the access and parking, those issues have been noted. The more important thing would be, while that location still would be very convenient and nice, however, something rather than nothing would be ideal at this point. So Southwest Park, location on the opposite end of the city, not the most convenient, but at least it already does address the opportunity for four courts. Modification would be smaller. It's not currently underway. Seems like another opportunity for progress.
Alderman Mayer.
I would support a school-city, some kind of a partnership. And I don't want to repeat things that have already been said. I agree completely with things Mark brought up. I would support that, but I don't want to give you any false hopes either. Of the six Milwaukee County cities that you recognize here, school districts have the majority of the clusters. They have all of the clusters, basically. Of those cities that have city parks with tennis courts, there's only three, and that's Oak Creek, Franklin, and Greendale. Greendale has one, the community center. Oak Creek has several. They have five parks, nine courts. Franklin has four parks with eight courts. I do support them scattered around the city for people to use. I think that's a good thing, as all our parks should be. I want to go back and not say I don't support something with the school district jointly that could be worked out, but I don't want to give false hopes. I see us as having several city parks with tennis courts. If we look at Cudahy, it's the high school and a county park. South Milwaukee, the high school and a county park. Oak Creek has several parks and county parks. Greenfield, high school, two high schools, and two county parks. And I can go on and on. They're county parks. And when we compare those cities with those county park facilities, it's not really fair to put us in that same court, so to speak, when we do already have several tennis courts now. That being said, I don't not support this with the school district, but I don't want to give any false hopes that I'm going to have a glowing yes for this.
Let me do Alderman Mayer first.
Okay, first of all, I love the idea of this, especially the mini courts. I think they're adorable, and would totally support that. You're actually asking for a total of 10 courts.
With the mini.
With the minis. As far as who were the three residents? It said in our packet that there were three residents that kind of were talking amongst themselves and kind of brought this up to the Parks Commission. Who were those?
Dave and I. And I met with the Parks Commission initially in October. And then
okay, so it was not three.
Oh, initially in October, I was at the during citizen comment
right.
period at the Parks meeting, and two of the two community members who live in Franklin, they teach tennis both at the high school and recreational level, Village Club and other clubs. They joined me in October to share their knowledge of tennis within the southeastern Wisconsin area. One teaches in Oak Creek, Greendale, and Berlin,
okay.
along with the high school. So there are two coaches as well.
Excuse
right.
me one second. Let the record reflect that Alderwoman Evans has joined us at 7:04.
Do you know the softball fields put in because of Title IX?
Correct.
Right.
What is the issue with Title IX with regards to tennis courts?
Since there's not existing tennis courts for boys at the high school, then there's no need for similar facilities, equal facilities for the girls. So that's basically what Title IX says. If you've got a baseball field boys, you have to have a softball field for girls. If you have a tennis section that you would deem only boys, then you would need girls. Since they don't have any tennis courts, they're not in violation. Neither gender is being slighted since there is no tennis courts. There are no tennis courts.
Okay. And in regards to that, and kind of going off of what Dan, Alderman Mayer, was saying, you look down this list of the different courts per community, and every high school has
correct.
Courts except the Franklin High
That's
School.
That's correct.
Is there any explanation at this point why that would be?
It simply has not come to fruition. We don't know the history of, you know, 50 years worth of the high school, but it simply has not come to fruition. The thing I want all of you to please keep in mind relative to high schools providing courts for their students, While they provide them for their students, they also provide them for the community. There is a dual benefit. So given the fact that we cannot control at this point in time what is left of land at the high school, it's over, it's done. They do not have land to utilize for tennis courts as much as they would like to provide. It is the only sport that the high school is incapable of providing on campus for the students. It is the only one. We are the only ones, as you noticed, all of you on here, out of all of the communities, whether they be Waukesha County or Milwaukee County, Racine, or Kenosha, it's the only community that doesn't have aggregated courts available for use for residents. Residents, whether they be high school students or whether they be adults or youth in the community. It's the only one, and we can't go backwards. They don't have the land available to use to provide for the need.
Okay. What other types of facilities would be necessary in these clusters for any tournaments or anything that...
Tennis is about the simplest of sports. You need a little bit of minimal seating, 2-3 rows of bleachers, very small, very short sections. It's a quiet spectator sport, and parking. There is very minimal needs. Often some of the places do provide just a small little... like a picnic bench with a little canopy above, so if people want to sit underneath from the sun.
Mini pavilion in between the courts, so get out of the sun, get out of the rain.
Yeah. A little bathroom. Very minimal.
A little bathroom meaning?
One or two, male or female. I mean, just nothing large. Like, similar to what is potentially at Vernon Burg, but that's a rather large pavilion. They're usually far smaller than that.
So it'd need to be sewered.
So again, depending on location, where it would go in a park, you might already have that in your plans. So if it goes in the Southwest Park, I'm assuming there's restrooms already factored in. So there'd be no additional. You would need additional facilities if you already have it figured in, depending, again, on location.
And given what's all being planned in Southwest Park, my assumption is that there would probably be two bathrooms.
Or not.
He doesn't like that part.
Or not.
How large a group of are the residents, not high school students and the rec department, but how large a group of are the residents who use those kind of facilities?
To give you an idea of what the membership is at Village Club, the membership is at 1,800. 900 of those members are from Franklin, and tennis is one of the largest draws for that facility. It is a very active group. All age groups.
Where did it rank in the, wasn't it a survey, an information on a survey?
Yeah, there's a survey also in the corp that outlines, let me just find it. It's one of the most commonly requested facilities that Franklin is lacking, but it also does have, it's on chapter 1, page 15. It ranked fourth in participation considered. This was a 1998 survey. The number one thing that was requested was going to the library, which we've addressed that need. Fourth was tennis. Racquetball came in third, and second was biking or cycling trails. So it's not giving the community something that they aren't and have not been already asking for. And again, I want everyone to think about this as a very comprehensive need for the city, and irrespective of whether or not the courts are on high school property or city property or county property, the fact that is most evident on here is that they're there and that these communities have them. We do not. No matter where you look, whatever parcel of land you look at within this community, it does not exist in Franklin. Even from a, even from a private standpoint, the courts at Tuckaway are insufficient. They're in very poor condition, and there's too few of them. So even on a rental basis, it's not sufficient. And certainly the community, all people are not members of Tuckaway and don't have the ability to use them. So I did include them because I also included Village Club in the survey, but the Greendale also has the community center. So irrespective of where they're located, on what kind of designated parcel of land, the fact that is pervasive is that we're the only community that doesn't have them and doesn't have them in an aggregated location. Other schools, they plan for tennis differently. It was addressed. It has not been addressed here, and There is no land at this point to address it at the high school. But even if it could be, it would be available for community use as well.
You had stated that the only option for the high school is to rent. Do you know how much they rent those facilities for?
The fees are minimal. It's about $1,000.
For the season?
For the season.
For boys and girls. Total.
It's minimal. The thing to keep in mind as well is because it's rented from other communities, other private entities as well, they reserve the right to not allow that to happen as well.
Has that ever been an issue?
Not so far.
Okay, and then as far as the participation, you know, obviously it's going up from 2010 to 2014. Do you, out of curiosity, is it from the trend of what's going on with the enrollment, how many kids are in the school? Or is it just an increase in interest in tennis?
Increase in interest. You can see the increase in interest has also occurred from last year to this year among the youth as well. It was a 47% increase. So interest in tennis is definitely there. It's a no-cut sport for the high school, so it encourages involvement for more and more kids who otherwise might not have an opportunity to play and participate in sports. The other component is when you do take a look at participation and talk to the coaches, if kids don't finish the season, the number one reason why they quit, according to the coaches, is because they don't get enough playing time. They don't get to play enough because there aren't enough courts. They sit around, even during practices. You can't have 58 girls on the courts between Greendale and Franklin, the five courts in, at Tuckaway that they use. They just don't get enough playing time, so then they may not finish.
Does Franklin have the rec department for tennis? Or do these people go through, like, Greendale or something like that?
The rec department offers tennis. And what they do have is, for the youth, they have 3 weeks where they rent the three courts that are right over here by Lions Legend. And so they have 3 weeks where they reserve the courts. They're allowed to utilize the courts from 8:50 in the morning until 12:50 in the afternoon, Monday through Thursday, for three consecutive weeks. Each week is a specific age group. So during the week that the 5 to 7-year-olds are playing during those hours, there's 50. This year there were 53 kids that participated. And then when you go to the 8 to 10-year age group, it was 71 kids dispersed among, there's the three courts that they utilize. Additionally, I didn't include it in the statistics. I was not able to speak with Coach Champion, but she runs the boys varsity program at the high school. She also runs an additional week of camps offered to students in 5th through 9th grade. She also utilizes those same three courts. My understanding is that the rec department had requested for more courts within the community to utilize to support their programs because of the strong interest, so that they don't have to cap the enrollment, but that they're not allowed to use more courts because they need to leave them available for open play for community residents that show up. They're only limited to what they are able to reserve during those times.
I'm sorry, you said that they requested more court time from the city?
More courts to utilize for the rec program so that they could grow the program more and have more courts available to use for rec department class offerings. I don't know exactly when they've requested. They've requested in the past and said that they're limited to the three and they can't have more.
Do you know if they've talked to the school district at all either about options?
Not quite sure how the school district could help since they have no courts. Yeah. But I do know that often many kids are participating in the programs at the Village Club and also in Oak Creek. They have a very robust summer program for tennis. Someone had mentioned earlier about maintenance and fees. I do know that, let me just take a look. I have it somewhere in my notes. In Waukesha, at the Woyan Complex, Waukesha South does run tennis camps in the summer, and they are very strongly attended. That they make between $10,000 to $15,000 per year on the drill programs that they're allowed to for their programs, and then that money in turn is utilized for court upkeep. So, and the courts typically, once they're constructed and built, they don't need to be typically touched again for at least 7 years, when the surface would have to be repainted and redone. So that's money that could be utilized in addition to whatever the school district would be willing to do to help with the upkeep. Traditionally, what happens in any community, whether, again, the courts be on high school property or not, community residents are allowed to use it. But there are generally designated weeks of the year where the courts are reserved for high school use during certain hours. And then outside of that, they're available for open play. And that's just the relationship that has been developed with the city and with the high school in all of these locations. So again, exclusive of whether or not it's on high school property or not, the community is able to use them. They just block certain hours so that the high school can have consistent access. It's the same with the Woyan complex in Waukesha, where they're allowed to rent it to the high schools for certain hours, and then the public's allowed to use them outside of that.
Okay, and then has a lot of research obviously has gone into this. Have you looked at anything as far as the grant money available? I know USTA has grant money available.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
Okay, we've certainly looked into it. It's something that we are willing to continue to pursue. There is money that's available, typically up to $50,000 is what they would be you might be capable of receiving. There are very tight timelines and guidelines and specifications in order to be able to receive that money from them. They very strongly do encourage this type of atmosphere and opportunity within communities and will support it. City would also have to be willing to work with them in terms of providing the specs and meeting the deadlines of the USTA to have any opportunity at all to meet those requirements so as to get the money back. They also do offer money for that could be you could apply for the mini courts as well, because that is something that they also very strongly do encourage. There are no guarantees, but we would certainly be willing to explore that further and try to see what we might be able to come up with. But it would have to be done with cooperation from the city so that we could have all the documents and everything specified.
Okay. Yeah, because anything as much as you can get from that.
Just know that there aren't any guarantees.
The impact fees too. Right.
Yeah, no, they offer it. The recommendation would be to certainly plan as if you wouldn't be able to, and anything that we could get, we would certainly do our best to try to accommodate.
Is that it, Suzanne?
Yes, I guess so.
Ah, me. Kristen's complaining.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm waiting.
Before we do that, I do have another suggestion that I'm certain that nobody's looked at, all due respect, is Southwood Glen Park. Adjacent to Southwood Glen School. It's owned by the county. Mostly vacant, it's not maintained properly. Might be a good opportunity for the county to step up to the table and say, okay, that's where our tennis courts are. Getting anywhere on the southeast side of the city, but.
Well, that was actually my comment, so.
So let me just finish what I'm gonna say, and then you can have the table.
All right.
The one thing that all seven of us need to recognize and make clear to our constituents is that city parks are city parks. They're not the neighborhood's parks. They're city parks. Some of us have to give up a little bit for the benefit to the community. I mean, Mark and I live right off of Legend Park. I mean, it's a city park. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Just clarification. I don't understand.
There are residents who object to anything being put into a park, whether it's tennis courts or baseball diamonds or playgrounds or whatever. So, anyway.
Well, just follow up on that. That the park that's over here is actually not a neighborhood park. It's a more, there's another level of park. There's several levels of park.
Yep.
So that's why
yep.
that one is
yep.
A little bit different than some of the other smaller neighborhood parks. But we had talked about, well, actually, after the park, we talked in the hallway about the possibility of approaching the county. So that's something.
I think I'd like to have a little bit of level setting there with regards to the county. We've had some discussions about others that have spoken. The school district even has approached the county about acquiring some of the county land, and the county was simply not willing to do so. So I'm not quite sure what in the atmosphere has changed that would suddenly make them more willing to give us the land for this purpose. With all due respect, you know, we don't want to be sent down.
Right. Well, all you can do is ask, and if they say no, then at least you try, right? And that's how I feel.
Would any of you also be interested in working on that?
I said I would go with you.
I can tell you that the county exec would take that meeting. Nothing may come of it, but he would at least listen.
And I would be willing to accompany on that. So I was listening to them taking notes on this, and basically what I see is we have a few options. You have the school, you have the city, you have the county, you have the possibility of donated land. Thing that the city and the school have in common is the land, which is no land. So you, in one sense, you want the city to buy the land, then, but there's no request for the school to buy the land. So if the school's going to make use of it, I definitely think they need to have some kind of role, especially if they're asking the city to put impact fees in and buy the land and maintain it, and then they're going to use it. So we need a role there, definitely defined on that. As far as all of those organizations, I believe because they are considered nonprofit, in addition to the city, is classifies under the nonprofit category, I think they would all qualify for that grant funding for the stewardship, which allows them to purchase park and rec lands. So the school, I'm pretty sure they would also qualify for that, as well as the city. So there could be a joint partnership in that effort to apply for a grant. I'm not sure about the school. I know for a fact the city and the county both can qualify for that funding source. The city can act as your fiscal agent if you're not a 501c3, which I'm guessing you're not because you're pretty new. And so the city can actually act as your fiscal agent and collect fees for you.
Now, are you referring to the USTA money? Is that the grant that you're...
No, it's a state grant.
Okay.
It's a park and rec grant. It's the same one that the city would apply for to buy a park like South Park, Southwest Park. I don't know if you know anyone who would be willing to donate land, but for certainly someone who would have land, they get a nice tax write-off making a land donation. So if you can find someone who is willing to do that, then you'd be ahead on that. You could do some fundraising. The Kayla's crew, I don't know, they're way over $100,000, I think.
Yeah, but they're way short of what they want.
But their project is about the same cost as this one. So, I'm just saying there are options, and of course when you come to the city with a match in your hand, it's always easier to get the money back in that sense as well. So I'm just throwing out all kinds of ideas. I think that with the information you've gathered, you got a great start on applying for the grant.
And to just add a comment or two, Dave, feel free to jump in on the fundraising element. This community has been very generous in helping support the high school Sabre Stadium project. Dave and I were very much involved with that project.
So you already have experience, see?
It's a relatively very recent experience that we really worked the city over, the residents, the business owners, as hard as we feel that the temperature would have allowed.
Right.
To continue, you know, this wouldn't...
We're not afraid to fundraise, let's put it that way. However,
we have to be realistic.
Coming on the heels of that and then asking people who've already donated to a park, which is Kayla's crew, and then go ask them again to donate for a park.
Let me put some focus to this and see if we can draw this to a decision. Actually, not a decision, but what we're looking for is tomorrow night is, one, a referral back to the Parks Commission in support of changes to the Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan to support a cluster of tennis courts, almost said fields. So that's one thing that we need to do. And then, well, that's really all we need to do tomorrow night. volunteer to help with grant writing. We'll go down and talk to the county exec and see what the Parks Commission comes up with.
Can I ask a clarifying question with regards to your favorite park, Southwest Park, that doesn't technically exist yet?
It's a long way from existing.
Well, we don't want long way. We don't want a 20-year project here. With Southwest Park, since it's very fully documented in the corp, is that park not going to happen, and does that need to be an amendment, or is that still in the plans? Because it's fairly well spelled out what the plan is for there and where it would be. And
if you go to Chapter 9, it fairly well outlines an $11 million community center with no use. So just because it's in the document doesn't mean it's going to happen. Having said that, because it's in the document, it can happen easier than not being in the document.
So the funding component of it, originally looking at purchasing that 200 parcel of land in 2014 that got pushed to 2015, not going to happen?
There's no money in 2015 for that. No. Or I can smile at you and say, sure. But there's not. That park is a dream. It's not like Pleasantville, where the plan was there, the money was there, off we went. So if I could sit here and make you smile, but it would be a wing and a prayer.
Well, Mayor.
Alderwoman, Mayor. There's three of you, and I got all three.
One of the things is it depends on where your priorities are. If your priorities aren't on that park, it is a dream. So apparently we have a mayor who doesn't want that to happen. And
not that park.
So I guess that's your answer. And until you have, you know, some support on that from the guy in the middle chair, it's probably not going to go anywhere.
I think we're getting off topic, aren't we?
Well, it's a park that they want to. They're talking about trying to get that park going. And the Park Commission could make a recommendation to the council to put it in the budget and apply for the grant. Buy it, and there we can start small.
Then you got a vote of six. That's fine.
And you'd have to come up in the budget with the match to buy the land, and then you'd end up with a park like Pleasant View that we sat on since 1997, and finally got it built this year.
Alderwoman Evans. You
know? I apologize for being late, and I was at the Parks Commission meeting, and I'm sure it was made clear by the committee that this wasn't initiated by the school district. So I just want to make it clear that the school district is not asking for this, but the school district does pay impact fees and did pay impact fees for their recent addition. So I think that's important to note. And then also that tennis is a lifetime sport, so that there are many adult residents in the community that play tennis and do want to use tennis courts. So it isn't all high school students. And that's all I had to say.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion tomorrow night to send it back to the park committee to ask them to recommend updating the park plan, and it will come back to council for the council to vote up or down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There you go.
Step one.
Thanks for coming.
Great. Thanks for your time, everyone.
You don't remember the rules, but the rules are, if you're here for an agenda item, you got to stay through a whole meeting.
We brought a lunch.
Thanks for coming. Okay, thank you. Item two, reports and item three, discussion concerning consideration of a possible comprehensive update or replacement of the City Franklin Unified Development Ordinance. Joel's going to make his way up here, but I will give you background. This is the comprehensive outdoor, the comprehensive master plan has, must use the proper terms. The Unified Development Ordinance has bugged me since the day, frankly, I made the motion to approve. So this one's on me, folks. It's initially was put together as a great document, comprehensive, and covers all the bases, and it's turned into nothing but, in my view, a nightmare. There are good sections in it. There are good parts in it. But as a unified document, I think all of us would agree. It's unwieldy, it's unworkable, and I would like to see it either scrapped or changed, but that's not my decision. That's the decision of the six aldermen. So, having laid that out in my usual succinct and right-to-the-point terms, Mr. Deagle.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me do that. And I've discussed this at the staff meeting, and I didn't get anybody jumping up down saying, no, let's keep it. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Deagle.
So, yes, we're looking for direction from the council because this could be a very large undertaking, both time-wise, potentially even money-wise. Staff is supportive of updating the UDO, let alone any issues that anybody else has. Just day-to-day administration of the ordinance gives us a lot of headaches. That's just one factor. Another factor are the concerns and issues that have been expressed by public officials and citizens and developers over the years with parts of the ordinance. And then the third is just that it is old. And just like a plan, it's recommended that these ordinances be reviewed every once in a while. Things, you know, the development changes, the direction the city wants to go into changes, technology changes, and any one of those by themselves could justify a comprehensive revision to a plan, particularly the older it gets. It could be done, and up to now has been done in parts. Every time one issue comes up, we tackle that one issue, insert that change in the document, hope that we caught everything, and move on. But eventually you get to a part, I hate to use analogies, but it'd be like a Frankenstein. Put a whole bunch of different parts together that weren't intended for that purpose, and you just make it work. You force it and make it work. Are we at the point where something's breaking? I don't believe so. Are we at the point that there are lots of changes that could or should be done? Yes. Are we at the point that we have to toss out the whole thing and start over from scratch? That's one of the options. It's going to be mostly up to you guys. You know, we'll give suggestions and ideas and pros and cons. But bottom line, staff, particularly planning staff, I've only talked a little bit with other departments, and I haven't talked to you about this either. But there is some support as well from other departments as well. Thank you.
Well, before you go on, I just want to set the framework here. This is the first discussion.
Very first.
This is not, let's go, even though I wouldn't mind that. There's a lot of planning that Joel and I would have to do before we decided to let's go, because it is a big project. But I wanted you all to talk about it. I'm sorry, Joel.
Yes, that's a really good point. There's all the questions that I would have, I have my own answer as the planning manager, but they may not line up with the common council's. You know, like I mentioned, some of the things would be the amount of money, how much involvement from a consultant or other individuals in the community. Would we want to contain everything within one document, one ordinance still, or would we want to split it back the way most communities do it, two separate ordinances? There's pros and cons for both. Do we want to make this priority number one, or number two, or number three? Do we set deadlines? There's so many questions. And then just the technical. And that I haven't even touched the technical stuff. You know, some of the things that we've talked about over the years, SIC codes, you know, those are things that will be familiar to you, and you may already have some opinions. But there's a lot of elements of this ordinance that we haven't talked about yet that would probably be ripe for change if we decided to do this. We would have to bring those up. And again, there's pros and cons of making all these changes. Some of these changes are changes that I think would be, my guess would be they would be well received in the community. Some of the things we'll talk about might be uncomfortable. It'd be my duty as the planner for the community to at least bring these issues up, just like we did for the comprehensive master plan. The council can choose the decision that it wants. Not to tackle this at all, tackle this at some point in the future, or to go for it. You know, one of the ones that I could mention that I'm not very knowledgeable about, form-based zoning, something that a lot of planners are becoming more and more excited about, but only a limited number of communities have undertaken so far, but there is the potential for some advantages there, or more likely a hybrid approach. And the idea there would be you have an ordinance that would regulate the form and the appearance of buildings more so than we do now. The use of the buildings less than we do now. So again, with overlap with the SIC code, and this is just one example. So I just want to give you that this is one example, can become complicated, and there's many other examples. So this would be I can't stress that enough. I don't want to underemphasize this. This could be a massive undertaking, as large or larger than the comprehensive master plan. And that's just this form-based and SIC code stuff is just one example of what we would have to at least talk about. Now, again, it goes back to how big of an undertaking we want to do this. It could be the council ultimately decides there's six things that we want to address, and we're just going to fix the UDO for those. Or the council could decide, toss it all out, start from scratch, and then everything in between. So I can go into more details if you want more examples of things that we might have to address. I can go into more details about what the process would probably be. But as the mayor mentioned, this is just the first discussion. Wanting to know if there's interest by the council to continue this discussion. We don't know the cost. We don't know the time frame. If you're very serious about that, the next step would be talking to the Plan Commission, getting their input, coming back to you guys with some of that information. So more concrete ideas of how this would be done, how this could be done, timing, costs, that kind of stuff.
Show us the document.
That's the current ordinance.
Same as Alderman Wilhelm. I've got one at home, too. It's the most boring reading you ever want. Okay. So that was adopted in 1998, right?
And one or two major revisions. Lots of minor revisions.
I remember
revisions.
98 because I was in Dan Mayer's seat and I made the mistake. You know, I don't generally have regrets, but this is one of them. Okay. So over the past 20 years?
This would only be the last 10.
So that's the last 10 years of changes made to the document.
And clarifications, emails from the city attorney clarifying something, memos from staff clarifying something, going back approximately 10 years.
So if you turn that stack around with the bottom end out towards us and put it next to the other document, it's as big as the original document. Now you guys know why I'm saying it's broke. When the fixes take more space than
Well, I've always said, I've watched this over the years. When I got involved in 2000, this ordinance was passed in 98, and it was stuffed in a drawer, and no one was using it. Yeah. And so there were, the very first time it was adopted, there was a change made to it in the wetland issues. And I got on the Environmental Commission, and we came across the discrepancy where in one part of the ordinance said one thing and the other part it said another. And what happened was when they made that change, this thing is woven together. And when you make a change in one place, you have to catch them all. And every time there's been a change made, someone didn't carefully go through there enough and make all the changes. So I always said years ago, you should throw out all the changes you made, go back to the original document, you probably would have been fine. It's all the changes you made that goofed it up. So, because you never looked through it properly. So, the municipal code is a lot thicker than this. I don't hear anybody complaining about that. Now, I have a question. I have a question for you, Mayor, and I'd like all of you to think about the answer to this. Does Section 15-11 cover the ordinance?
No clue.
15-4?
No, I have no.
Okay. Before we throw out this document, it might be important that we know what it is and how it applies and read it. Now, I can answer those questions. I can tell you that 15-11 is the index. I mean, the definitions. Tells you need to look up what is something. You look it up and you can read what it is. Now, for council members to sit up here and not even know that is the actual last section of the ordinance, and the definition tells me It's no wonder you think it's a complicated document, because you don't know it very well. That's one thing. And I guess I'm not opposed to having changes to it. In fact, Joel, how many hours did we sit going through this? This is the document I sat with you and Mark Liberta, and we went through here, and all of these highlightings are all things we went over page by page. You guys tied up how many weekdays of mine? Hours. And here it sits. And here I get a disc from your planning staff with a little note in it. Okay? I haven't read it in a while.
Not that it's our planning staff.
Yes. The one that you have control over. Attached is the UDO version that's been updated by planning staff, but also contains some recommended revisions as noted throughout the document. This is a non-official document, but is a working draft for internal use only. So we have a bunch of suggested changes that might fix this, but we've never looked at them. This is dated September 2012. So 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, and now we're talking about, should we just spend a bunch of money and go replace it? Well, I don't know. Do we need to spend a bunch of money? Or could we do it just by looking through what's here? Or, you know, is it... I don't know. I guess the first thing I'd like to make sure the council members know what we have in front of us before we start talking about changing it and throwing out and getting rid of it and doing all this stuff. And when I ask questions and no one knows what sections it is, I know you're not reading this document. And I can understand why you would be confused by it. So I guess I want to know what exact sections, Mayor, that you have that are such a nightmare. If you can't tell me what sections they apply, so you must have something that you don't like about it that you can point to.
Absolutely.
Okay.
First of all, there's no way in God's green earth that I would even take the time to understand what a specific chapter is in that document, because there are so many other changes that have impacted that document that I don't have the time to try to figure out which one goes with which.
Well, they're all supposed to be updated on one area. Okay, go ahead.
No, that's right. A fallacy. There are two complete copies that are two different copies that I can find.
Well, that's problem one.
Well, but it's the nature of the beast. That is a problem.
Yeah.
It is a problem, and that's what I'm trying to get us to solve, right? So that document, if you tried to go through it, as I know you have, and tried to figure out what something meant and what applied to what, it's darn near impossible. My concern is, first of all, it occupies way too much staff time to try to put our wishes in front of a developer, because they've got to wade through that. Not only Joel, the city engineer staff, city attorney's got to do it. It's a nightmare. There's got to be a better way. That's the purpose of this conversation. Now, whether it's adjusted, I'm okay with that. But let's do something. We can't go through life this way. This is just ridiculous. The other problem is when you put that document in front of a developer, it's like, are you serious? Do you really expect the developer to walk through that document? Even the sections? If they go to R3E section, that refers to 15 other sections in the book. It's like, come on. So let's keep the natural resources. Let's look at some of the other sections that we like, and let's make some decisions eventually as to what we'd like to see that will streamline the operation and get us the community that we want. That's not doing it. The fact that we got a stack of changes the same height as the document means it's not working.
Well,
let's see if somebody else.
I know, but just to that point, Mayor, the stack of changes just also could mean not only it's not working, it could mean we've actually been keeping up to date and current with things that have changed in policies.
Exactly.
So it doesn't necessarily mean it just does. Just so I want to make that point.
That is my point. That's your point, too. We're on the same page. Who else has got a kick at the cat?
Sure hope I'm not a cat lover.
That's a good point. Alderwoman Evans.
Joel, can you tell us
or tell me, tell us why we, very few cities have a UDO, they have the two separate ordinances. Why did we choose that?
I do not know why we chose it. The consultant that we hired put it together. I'm assuming it was his recommendation, but I'm not sure.
Mr. City Attorney.
Circa 1993, 94, the 1968 zoning code, which was likewise amended from time to time, as are all zoning codes, was reviewed by the Planning Commission and the Common Council, and the thought was to consider amending it in its entirety. And a consultant was hired with the proposal to combine land use regulations, which used to be off the top of my head, Chapter 21 in the Municipal Code, together with Ordinance Number 221, which was the Zoning Code, which was a separate book incorporated into the Municipal Code. And over the course of, I'm going to say, 4 years approximately, maybe five, the Unified Development Ordinance was prepared, placed before the Common Council. I believe it was even at the Common Council meeting that former longtime Plan Commissioner, Mr. Ritter, made the comment that the UDO in the spring of 1998 was a work in progress. And I know that comment was repeated back in 2003 when the substantial amount of amendments were made, which were primarily in the environmental conservation protection area. And I also remember a Thursday night after a phone call, I prepared conservation easement, which staff has not been using since 1998, which it was supposed to do. And that form is still the city form, which was returned to the Common Council once with a suggestion that it be made better, but the answer was no, it's good enough the way it is.
Since not.
You're looking at me. Did I have
anything to do? Exchanges.
So that's why.
Okay.
It was a long-term process, Plan Commission, Common Council, and citizen input, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And with regard to amendments since after the 2003 August 1 effective date with all the environmental regulations in substance, what's been changed in substance, lighten up some of the regs with regard to lighten up, make less restrictive, if you will, and less pro-conservation certain of the environmental regs, and there's some common sense rationale to that. In terms of if you're not touching existing natural resource areas. SIC code classifications were reviewed substantially by the Plan Commission, and ultimately there was no recommendation to update those to the current. If there's concerns, some of the concerns I've heard Plan Commission-wise, Council-wise, staff-wise through the years is the old school zoning code says, okay, here's a permitted use in this area. You can do a machine shop, you can do a shoe shop, you can do a barber shop. Now you have about 40 pages, that might be an exaggeration, of small print, 50,000 different titles of uses, and each one has all kinds of digits in front of it. And it always ends up with this uses not otherwise classified, et cetera, et cetera. And now what's in the UDO has been outdated in terms of the SIC code nationally. But the one thought I heard about the UDO was maybe it gets way too specific in all these SIC codes and maybe something broader. Flip side argument on that point would be, well, then there's room for abuse because the categories of potential permitted uses is too broad, and you know the decision makers can get out of control on that. So there's, you know, it's zoning, and you look at since the Euclid case out of New York, I believe it was around 1920, and the Supreme Court says yes, you can zone. I mean, they're amended all the time, and all, no matter what you write, there's always ultimately going to be a court case telling you what that means. And on one side, they're going to be happy, and the other side, they're going to not be so happy. It's humanity. Sorry for the long answer.
Well, that's okay. I want to address that, actually.
Hold on, Mayor.
So even if we do rewrite it, we're going to be correcting it over and over again anyway.
Mm-hmm. Changing.
Mm-hmm. Changing. And
but
probably correcting it.
The better the job that we do, the less often we'll have to change it. But never, never let anybody sell you the idea that I can give you a perfect, that they can give you a perfect ordinance. It's a fallacy. It's a lie.
Except Jesse.
Nope. Time, because times change, technology changes. So even if we had the perfect SIC code, time machines. There's no SIC code for time machine making, but someday there will be, and then we'll have to change it for that. So there's always going
to
be something.
Alderman Mayer's left the seat at 8:50. Good luck, man. 7:50, sorry.
And then the other angle would be the community changes, what the community wants changes. Someday we will be a city, a true full-fledged city, with tall buildings, little vacant developable land left, and these codes will have to be much different at that time. So it'll be a transition from here to there, and so will the code. So pros and cons.
How does the UDO kind of fit in with the comprehensive master plan?
They're supposed to be like this. Both the subdivision and the zoning are implementation tools. It's the mechanisms you use to try to achieve what the comprehensive plan envisions. So the comprehensive master plan envisions broad, general direction, guidelines, goals, objectives, and these two ordinances try to achieve those. They need to be as consistent with one another as possible. Not the same, but consistent. You know, compatible. And as one changes, the other one should be reviewed. And so the more drastic the change in the comprehensive master plan, the more significant generally the changes would be to the ordinances. Small changes to the comprehensive master plan require small or no changes to the ordinance.
So was there a lot of change to the UDO when in 2003 and 2007?
No. We recommended this discussion. So again, at the time, the Planning Commission and Council weren't prepared, I assume, to tackle this. So there is a recommendation repeated in a couple places in the plan that as soon as possible, we start talking about reviewing a possible update, even possible replacement of these ordinances. This one. So that's where we are today. And as a planner, I would say, again, more than enough time has gone by, more than enough changes have gone by, more than enough clarification from what's been developed and the decisions the council have made to justify some kind of update to this plan. No doubt in my mind. The extent of that, that's where the doubt in my mind. How many changes, how significant, starting from scratch or working with what we have, that's where I'm at. I have my own personal recommendations, but that's a small piece in this bigger puzzle.
Yes.
We can come back to you.
That's
just
what
trying
I
to spread it around.
Thank
spread
you.
The love. Back to the original spread the love person. Alderman Willen.
Well, I thought maybe I should kind of make a point about the flexibility of the document. And what happens is this is a document, this is the same document that says no cul-de-sac or road should be longer than 800 feet. But yet, Evergreen Street to Pleasant View Park is longer than 800 feet. And that was put in there for a safety reason. So you can have this document, but we don't follow it to a T, obviously, because apparently, I just asked Mark, if you'd like to see it, because he doesn't even have a copy of it. So we might want to start with making sure everybody has a copy of it that aren't supposed to be.
But it's not complete.
The one that is on the city's website is the complete document. All right, it's supposed to be updated. Why aren't we putting the updates on there?
It was a codification that still needed city attorney review. So we some portion of these were UDO text amendments approved by the council. Those, the draft you're talking about, staff, planning staff, took those UDO text amendments and inserted them into the latest draft of the UDO, that version that's on the city.
And you're actually using some of those.
We use both versions in our planning department.
I know, and that's what's, you know, it's like I never know which version to go with because you're using both versions, so stop doing that. Pick one and use it. You know,
but
you can't, you know, I ask you one question, 1 minute's the next thing, the next minute's another. So that's a problem right there. Get us a clean document, get it up to date, and then let's use it, and what doesn't work, then it's time to change it. But every time we do this update, the one thing that always loses is the natural resource part. Every single time. We went from having, when you have certified survey maps, they were tweaked. Now we have a certified survey map that you don't even have to do a wetland delineation on. So guess what that causes? You put a certified survey map together, then it becomes a lot of record because you created a lot. Now, Joel Deedle tells me when someone comes out and put a housing lot on it, and if it's a lot of record, he doesn't have to ask for the DNR permits. So I got a lot in my district where they came out and they accidentally got delineated by the neighbor, and Mr. Deedle tells me he doesn't have to follow up on that. So we end up filling wetlands against state law because we don't do what the original ordinance said. When you do a certified survey map, you get all the delineations and you put them on there. We don't do that anymore. We do best available. Anybody who knows anything about wetlands, you have to stick a shovel in the ground and look at the soil, write down the plants. That's all part of a wetland delineation. You cannot do best available. You just can't do it. So that's what we're stuck with now. The other area that went through was essential services. Tomorrow night we have a plan that's going to go through. That's going to go right through the middle of a wetland. Put in essential services will require no mitigation, will require cutting down of a couple hundred-year-old oak trees and no replacement of, and it's supposed to be a temporary impact. How do you temporarily impact a wetland with a couple hundred-year-old trees that you cut down and then you throw a DOT roadside seed mix on top? How is that a temporary wetland? Because once you dig a trench through a wetland and you put a pipe in and you put gravel around it, guess where the water is going to flow? It's going to follow that pipe. It's not. So I'm just telling you, these are the kind of things.
I understand that, but let's deal with UDO and that issue we can talk about.
Well, you need to understand that, I'm telling you, every time we do this, the wetlands, we open it up and the natural resources always lose. And there's one thing I learned when we were doing the master plan. The citizens, the community, extremely appreciate the resources that are here. And so that's fine, but we better not be hacking away at that as the first thing on the agenda. There better be some other reason why we're doing this. Okay, that's where I stand on it. And the first thing that comes is chopping away at that, then I'm going to know what this is really about.
Alderman Dander.
Well, I think, Kristen, the mayor did preface that we wanted to look at it. We would take the good, adjust some of the bad, and the areas of concern. If the natural resource end of it has been somewhat adjusted and is not favorable to what the law dictates, that area would have to be fortified and strengthened. Or if we haven't adequate in the plan, we have to start to enforce it. But I think I got an understanding that you may be interested in looking at making enhancements or, let's say, bringing it up to date. I'd like to at least know, you know, some cost factors to all of this and the time element to all of this, you know, in on top of the development plans that we have for the city for the in the upcoming year, 2, 3, 4, 5. And are you able to have staff and I heard you know, I heard that you were considering possibly hiring out, hiring out and then getting the wishes that we want here. How is a hired person going to address the wishes of the people here to get a usable document that we're going to be able, you know, to really implement? Those are where my concerns are. Is hey, if we can have the best of all worlds, you know, lay out an idea of what this is going to cost to the city, because how much did that original plan cost?
Well, I'm going to answer your questions because there was a lot of them there. We're at stage one right now, opening the conversation. Okay, that's all we're at. So let's get the conversation started. How much is this going to cost? Depends on what you want to do, and we haven't come to that decision yet. Can it happen inside or contract? Depends on what you want to do and what your decision is. And here we go again. It all relates to workload and what we have our staff doing at any given time. If we're loading them up with all kinds of little things that in the scheme of things probably aren't that important, then they'll never get it done. So then we should go outside. But is that worth spending the money on? I don't know. We're just starting the conversation. It's just the start of the conversation.
Well, you've determined that there's a need.
Absolutely, in my view.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then bring it to us and let us know. What it's, you know, give us, you've told us the need. Now, hey, I'm willing to, you know, spend some time and tell us what this is going to cost. I mean, you know, we're not the experts here. These guys are. They use it every day. Okay? Tell me what they need to make it adequate. Can we do it at A, B, or C? And then we make a decision on how much we want to spend.
Just update what's there.
That's an option.
Well, but updating that there is still going to cost money. But it doesn't matter the money. We want to get it right.
Let's try to get this orderly. I heard what you said. I don't have an issue with that either. Mr. City Attorney.
Just a simple thought. And staff had a full-time employee that worked for 2 or 3 years updating the UDO.
David?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the last year or so. Before that, he was a regular planner. The last year, he was primarily just UDO.
In any event, the UDO needed the amendment post-2004 to be put in. I said, I'll whoop it out in the weekend. Decision was made. Now staff's going to take a look at it. So ultimately, and this is the numero uno item on my backlog list, somewhere in 2011, Mr. Canning's work product came in, but it wasn't just plugging in all those amendments, which are online, but you have to jump to them. And I still say you can plug in those amendments over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have
Look at Sandy's doing here.
But what staff did was added comments throughout and proposed other changes, you know, for review, which makes it extremely time consuming. But the short version is that new assistant city attorney, Joshi, got that as a task to go through the entire thing. And what is it, 431 pages? A week and a half ago, I think it was. She was on page 100. And so that should be completed. So we can discuss, we meaning in the legal services department, what are these comments? Are they viable legally, et cetera, et cetera? But my simple thought at this point was perhaps just get the total updated version. And the mayor earlier referenced there's this one out there, and there's that one out there, and different numbers here and there, letters for something. Just get it done with what's already been adopted, and it is an ordinance, it's not a book, and disseminate that to all the common council members.
It's an ordinance that is a book.
It's the law in the city of Franklin.
Exactly.
Yes, correct.
And disseminate current UDO to all the common council members for their review, and then bring that back. And I'm going to estimate that that updating project should be done probably this month.
Okay. So you just heard the city attorney say it's going to take. So the next time you have this urge to call a city attorney about something, stop and think about it. And I'm dead serious about this. The volume of calls to staff for stuff that's important individually, but in the scheme of things, maybe you can figure out on your own. Just think about that when you make a phone call. So Alderman Mayor, I think, is next.
In the beginning of this thing, you're talking about the different people who are concerned about it. I'm just wondering which public officials have discussed this or, you know, had concerns about it.
Currently, the mayor is one. Previously, Alderman Skoronski strongly disliked the SIC code. He ran into individual specific examples where he had to go through the UDO text amendment to get a business allowed in the zoning district that he supported.
Okay, so some ex-public officials and then the current mayor, and then you said some citizens. Who are they?
Primarily developers or small individual property owners who are trying to do something with their property. Examples that we haven't talked about yet, fences and accessory structures. You're aware of at least one situation.
Yes, I do. Okay, and then what are the developers' concerns?
Too cumbersome and too strict.
Too strict in regards to?
Standards are set too high.
In regards
to? Everything from natural resource protection, lot coverage, design standards, setback requirements. At some time or another, they have expressed concern with those standards. I'd say equally concerned about process. And again, these ordinances not only are they interwoven tightly with the comprehensive master plan, they're interwoven tightly with process. How much do you have to go as a developer or property owner in the city? How much do you have to go through? How much red tape? How many applications? How much information do you have to hire consultants to prepare to get whatever you want, whether it's to build a fence or to build a shopping center? So they've complained, I would roughly say, roughly equally about specific standards and process. But there's always pros and cons. What they would usually like is the bare bones minimum and quickest turnaround time as you can. It's probably not acceptable to this community. But are there specific improvements that we could make? I bet you there are.
Alderman Schmidt, I saw you over there. That was for her.
Let's think, too, now, that stack of amendments. You're talking about trying to streamline the process for developers and stuff. These amendments are taking us in the other extreme then, aren't they? That we're continuing to make it more and more difficult. Well, we've tried to discuss how to streamline things to make city more business friendly, but it seems we continue to make more amendments that will kind of make more hoops to jump through or not?
I would say it's a mixed bag. Sometimes it's just clarifications staff didn't understand, or it appeared that one part of the ordinance conflicted with another part, so we're looking for clarification. Other times we're to allow something that was not allowed before. And sometimes, yes, it is to create new, you know, the natural resource standards. You know, weren't in the current natural resource standards, weren't in the original 1998 version. So we have made some changes that have made things more complicated, if you want to say. But I'd say it's a mixture of more complicated, easier. We've made changes to allow preliminary plans to make it clear that we can, that applicants can provide preliminary site plan, preliminary stormwater plan, preliminary lighting plan. It wasn't clear before. So some of the changes we've made have clarified and simplified things as well.
So,
but not all.
If you were going to move forward, part of this reworking this, would we continue then to simplify it, or are we going to just wind up with another layer? It's like, well, now we're clarifying this from this, and now you're going to go to this stage, which, and I think as was mentioned before, are some of these amendments not thoroughly vetted all the way through that there's, you can go back and still find some conflict with in what the amendment was and say, well, but originally it said this. So it's
you have now discovered the problem.
Yes. And then too, if we start working on this, then where does the comprehensive master plan fall in? Are we still going to be following? Is one going to fall in with the other one?
I would hope that we would also talk about the comprehensive master plan. If we are looking at any major changes, removing something significant or adding something, because there's so many things in this ordinance, like many other communities, that aren't required by state or federal law. Anything to do with design standards, architecture, not required by state or federal law. We could totally remove all those requirements. But if we did so, that would have a significant impact on the comprehensive master plan, and we'd have to make an amendment to that as well. So I would want to bring that up. If we're making those kind of dramatic departures in our ordinances, we'll have to make similar changes to the comprehensive master plan.
Why would that affect the master plan?
One of the primary goals and principles of the comprehensive master plan, high quality. So and we give examples of what high quality is in its architecture. So if we're no longer going to have those as requirements, it's probably not a high principle or important principle of us anymore, because we have no legal teeth to push from that. There's always few, there'll be a few exceptions, of course. You know, PDDs, when we create each one from scratch, we can always put whatever architecture requirements we want in there. But if somebody was a permitted use in their zoning district, we probably wouldn't have a means to push for better architecture.
Alderman Schmidt saw us before.
That's enough for me.
Well, there are issues that have come up all the time where common sense should have prevailed. Bring to the point of the mulligans, where they had wanted to put something over the top of like an asphalt parking lot, and they're telling them they have to do a natural resource protection plan. It's like common sense should tell you that you don't need to cause a problem. Just do that. So there are some things like that that we kind of carry a little bit far, which could be a judgment call. But I agree with Doug. It's the intertwining. But Doug made the fact of, are we making it more cumbersome and not as easy for developers? Well, all those changes aren't necessarily making it more cumbersome. They're actually, most of the changes were made to make it supposedly easier. So if we actually put them in there, maybe it would be easier. So that's why I'm saying, why don't we start there? But I still go back to the the change that I don't know if it's in that pile or not, but that was that certified survey map where we don't require anything and we use this best available data. And no one really understood at the time the consequences of that. And now we're starting to see that the things come in where this best available data is supposed to be enough. And it just doesn't make any sense. And then you also have, once you start making changes that, you've got the municipal code has connections to this as well. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you start with another document or whatever, you're going to end up with this as work. But to me, if you have a problem with that, you need to bring it forward. That's part of your job, to say this section needs to be changed and bring it forward. And if you were piecemealing this the whole time along since you've been here, it seems to me like it should be up to date. And why it's, you know...
That's my current problem. I'm no longer happy with piecemealing this. So I'm asking the question. Should we stop piecemealing it and do a comprehensive
I'm
revision?
Talking, when I'm not saying what piecemeal is, like when you see an issue that needs to be updated, you can bring it to us. And I guess I'm trying to think, what are your major problems with this? Because you're always going to have a developer who's going to wiggle out of something. You're always going to have that. I don't know a developer anywhere that's not going to complain that they got to do something, but they do it in every community, and everybody bends because they're complaining. Well, I was working with Jesse. We put together the public hearing for all the natural resource stuff, and we had that very well balanced, didn't we, Jesse? We had builders, we had Metropolitan Builders Association, we still had people saying, aldermen saying, the developers aren't going to want to do that. And the Metropolitan Builders Association and the consultants said they were okay with it. They understood why we wanted to protect our wetlands and have setbacks and that. And they're going, that's just too much. They're going to complain about it. Well, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you got to understand. You're going to have complaints. People aren't going to want to follow our laws. But this is our vision for our city. And if we want standards, and we don't want to have homes flooding, and we want to call something, something other than a drainage way because we want a setback on it so the house isn't on top of it, then we should be able to do that. And if the developer doesn't like that because their idea is to build and get the heck out of the city and leave us with all the problems, then we have a right to uphold those standards. And, you know, I've heard more complaints about the fire code and the side ordinance than I've heard anything about this ordinance. That's a fair assessment. Since I've been here, I have had all kinds of complaints about the fire code and the sign ordinance. Yet we've done nothing with the sign ordinance.
It's on my list. I agree with you. You just gave a speech that I must have given about 10 times. Have you heard that from me sitting in that chair right there? If you've got an issue with the UDO, bring it forward, we'll fix it. The problem, folks, is very simple. There's only 24 hours in a day. And unfortunately, the workload that we put on our staff doesn't let Joel just sit back and fix the UDO.
Well, the city attorney has a great solution.
I agree. Okay. I agree. But what you said is, quit piecemealing. He doesn't have a choice at the moment. It's what his workload permits him to do. So, you know.
I don't know. Maybe he should be sitting in here on weekends like the clerk, right?
Let's not make assumptions about the work habits of our employees.
It's all about where your priorities are.
I will defend our work habits of our employees. Mr. Diva works more than 8 hours.
I know he works.
And it's not fair to expect anyone to come in unless they make that choice, past their off hours. Not only that, it's probably illegal. So anyway, it's been a good discussion. like the discussion. It's kind of the discussion that it went the way I wanted it to go. So what we've got, anybody else want to weigh in? Alderman Evan, do you have?
I would just like to say, is there anything in the UDO that, if you could have, if you had a chance yourself to have more direction on your own, would it be helpful? You understand what I'm saying? That.
Yes, I don't know where I want to go with my answer. There's what's more likely to happen or my dream?
Both. No, your dream. What is your... What?
As a planning manager, dream, not
well,
crazy
that,
total
that would make
dream.
Your job easier. Let's say right now, let's say we didn't do anything with it.
One, there are communities that have much smaller ordinances, less detail in the ordinance itself. And one of the communities in Kenosha County, Jean Worby, is the head planner there. You may have heard of her. Their ordinance specifically states in many instances, you know, as further determined by staff or you know, I forgot what the terminology they use, but it clearly states in the ordinance where it's not clear, staff can make the call. If the council supported staff's interpretations of that, it'd be a much simpler, that idea, it'd be much simpler to have a smaller ordinance.
I see.
That would be my dream. More realistically, again, I'm saying my preference is to update comprehensively, whether we keep the framework and bones of this or start from scratch. I was looking for direction. More realistically, if I couldn't get that, I would want to try again with those SIC codes. Probably after that, it would be a tougher decision. I didn't really pick a second and third priority because there are so many. There's the possibility of lot coverage, fences, accessory structures, site plan and special uses. We'd like to make it clear that when you do a special use, you shouldn't have to do a full-blown special use if you're a tenant in a multi-tenant building and there is no exterior changes, that kind of stuff. So those are just some examples. I have a lot of examples, but prioritizing, I hadn't thought too far about them.
Okay.
But probably SIC code. And it comes up all the time. We had the issues with the SIC codes for the I'm thinking more recently the Orchard View, the realtor that wanted to go into Orchard View. And the SIC codes are used by a number of communities for zoning purposes, but they weren't created for zoning purposes. They were created for federal government accounting and tax purposes. But there's always variations. As Jesse sort of alluded to, it's a four-digit code that we use right now. That's SIC. There's a new NAICS system that's replacing the SIC. And that goes up to 6 or 8 digits. We don't have to go that direction. We could go back to the direction where there's only 2 or 3 digits, much fewer categories, but broader definitions, which, as Jesse alluded to again, is the other side of the coin. Would you trust staff to make those interpretations when now we have a broader definition of what that SIC code is, and now we're trying to fit in this actual use into one of these categories, and it could go into either or a couple? Yes, we can always bring those interpretations back to the council, but if we're trying to be business-friendly and streamline the process, that's the wrong direction to go. You want to have staff be able to make those calls.
And that cuts both ways.
Right. And then, then the pressure's on us. We need to know what the council and the community is looking for. So we're on the same page making those calls the correct way. It's more pressure on us, too.
but that requires the Common Council to be more communicative.
Yes.
That's not implying that we're not already, but it's, but that, that'll get you, the SIC codes will get you a dollar store where you don't want one.
Yes.
It works both ways. Or you may not want one. Alderman Dandridge.
So, if we give up, basically, Steve, back in 1998 when you guys came through with this plan, you wanted to have strong controls in place. Now you're saying the controls are too limiting and we want to ease up and give those controls to staff and take controls away from the County Council.
It's two different types of control. We wanted, as I recall, and this was 1998, guys, it was a long time ago, many beers.
Yeah,
hair
back then.
1998, it's my belief, and I was the rookie alderman at the time, that the Common Council wanted more community control over development. And I'm not sure, I don't remember that there was any conversation about whether staff or Common Council would do it. But the document clearly made it less staff. So maybe that was the intention. I don't know. My issue is not necessarily with control or design guidelines. Whatever. I'm all for high quality standards and putting the standards in the document. I'm all for that because it sets an expectation. You know, at that point, the developer can take it or leave it. You know, that's fine. At least they know what's going on. I don't think we've got that at the moment. The SIC codes are out of date. It's just, and look at that. It's a mess. Fix it. So we're moving on towards fixing it, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm in favor of utilizing a tool that is going to make us operate more efficient. So, as you said, hey, let's look at the options that will allow us to do that. If it's as simple as having Jesse and the legal staff update the book, which I don't know if it is. I'm just talking. But if it's to, hey, the true answer is we need to invest time and some money into doing it. Hey, let's get some answers to us and let's go forward.
Alderman Mayor.
Well, I have a question regarding the control. If you're talking the TIF districts and the CDA basically takes authority, I guess, I don't know if that's what you say, over that, how does that affect, you know, with a very simplified UDO? I mean, it kind of takes the control away from the Common Council and kind of puts it into the CDA's hands, and they're able to make decisions anyway, but with a even wide open ordinance that doesn't specifically say certain things, they would really be able to do whatever the heck they wanted to.
No. The CDA will get planning guidance from the Plan Commission and the Common Council as to, in this plot of land, here's what's permitted overall.
Overall?
Yeah.
But with a wide open interpretation.
I'm not sure that's fair. No, I don't think so.
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, no,
and I would hate to open up something, you know, to a degree. I mean, there's a lot of developable land in Franklin. There's a lot of stuff going to be happening. A lot of plans already on the table. And doing something that doesn't allow the elected officials to make very specific decisions makes me uncomfortable.
I appreciate that. There's, but
I
the
hope
community,
so.
Community development authorities and the TIF law was set up specifically to try to remove politics from those kind of decisions after the guidance and the planning were put in place by the community. It's supposed to be an apolitical body. That doesn't mean that they don't. That doesn't mean that they're. They don't listen. They're just supposed to be apolitical, that's all.
They're not accountable, though. the elected officials are the ones accountable. That makes me uncomfortable.
It's the tools we're given. I don't know how else to explain it. It's what we got. And it was set up on purpose by people who believe they're much smarter than us. State reps.
Debatable.
Mr. Deedle.
I would just say that it requires state law or our ordinances to delegate power to somebody else, whether it's staff, planning commission, or CDA. So there are certain state requirements that we probably can't trump, but everything above and beyond that is within the power of the common council.
And but the CDA is not a recommending body, is my understanding.
But I would believe, as Jesse corrects me otherwise, they have very little zoning and planning authority, the CDA, except what we, the city of Franklin, give them. So it would be up to you, the council, to decide what that appropriate amount is. And it wouldn't have to change one iota if we updated the UDO if you didn't want it to. Or it could change either way, either direction, if you guys wanted it to.
Mr. City Attorney.
About a second thought, in addition to providing the council members with an updated through current draft, city planning manager, in conjunction with that, will distribute a list of his top 20 potential changes, and then the subject matter can come back to the common council second meeting in January, with the goal being approximately New Year's Day to have these updated documents distributed. And that's fingers crossed, because there's other New Year's Day deadlines for ordinance drafting for Friday.
Can we have a New Year's Eve, because I have nothing to do?
We'll get something to do. Alderman Wilhelm.
Yeah,
I don't believe that for a minute.
It's a reclamation plan issue.
Yeah, that's my point.
I thought that's what we did the last time, and that's how we got to this point. That's why they sat down with me, and I gave all, do you have any of those comments? They asked me to go through. I went through and found typos and fixed things, and we went through and I told them where you should link things, what were this. And I don't know, what did you do with all my time and effort I put into this thing?
We still haven't.
Yeah, did they go to
most of those were related to the natural resource changes, correct?
Not all of them. Every single section in here has a highlight in it.
And those changes I took to EDC, Environmental Commission, and Plan Commission. EDC was supportive. Environmental Commission wanted to hear what everybody else was going to recommend, but didn't seem to be too supportive. And Plan Commission wasn't supportive. The mayor at the time said, well, we're done.
I've never seen those come up. If I'm the one who did them and I've been an alderman, why wouldn't I have seen those?
You missed the last part of what he said.
What?
Say that again.
The mayor at the time said, doesn't seem to be any support for this, so stop working on it.
Well, I didn't. You never told me anything went before. If I would have known, I could have. You can't make my case for me. If you're going to bring it before something, why should you tell me you were going to do it?
You missed what he said. The mayor said stop working on it.
No, he said he took it before the Environmental Commission. He took it before the
EDC.
But he kind of forgot to inform the person who brought the things forward so she could make her points about why, which might have made a huge difference in the support. Because if you don't understand the reasoning, why would you support it?
I get all of
it?
That, but you missed the important point. The important point was, he went through all of that, and the mayor said, stop.
And you're missing my point.
No, I understand your point.
No.
And it's valid. But
okay.
The mayor said, stop. So he stopped. What are you going to do?
He said stop because there wasn't any support. And I'm saying...
That's politics.
Okay.
He wanted it to stop. He stopped it. So there you go.
Yeah.
I'm saying let's start...
You put the blame there, but I'm saying he should have told me. If you're going to bring something forward, you should tell me.
I believe I did. And it's very...
Guys, no, let's just...
All right.
Understood.
Here's the point. When he says he wants to have more control, and you say staff recommends that the draft ordinance be approved for here's one. Staff recommends that the Plan Commission approve the architectural dumpster enclosure changes or something. The the problem with staff making those changes and making those suggestions, the Plan Commission has no public input. So every time you have staff send it to only the Plan Commission or staff making the decisions in the basement, you're cutting out public input. Now, it might be different if we had a public input on the Plan Commission, but you can go to the Plan Commission and have something very valid as an alderman, and it's like there's not even a method to allow you to speak. So I guess I have concerns about cutting out public process. If the changes come forward, don't cut out the public process, I would be more likely to support them. But when you start doing that and start making decisions in the basement, I don't think that's the best idea. Some decisions, yeah, but there are a lot of decisions that there's a reason why we want the public to know about it. It's going to affect them.
I don't think I've been chairman of the Planning Commission since April 15th. And there's never not been entertained a motion to suspend the rules to allow anyone to speak, to the best of my knowledge. Now, last meeting, none of them wanted to hear from the public at that point because they had already heard from the public. And we will continue to hear from the public. So that, to me, made sense. But the illustration... The issue you just illustrated was a dumpster enclosure changes.
Well, I just threw something.
Okay, I accept that. Okay, who else? We've got something for tomorrow night, and that's to have the city attorney's office put it together, and then the top 20 from Joel by, I'm going to say, committee all February.
And I could try for January. If I can get it on January, I'll do January.
And you can get it to Alderwoman Mayor for New Year's Eve.
Please.
Even though I know her husband's going to take care of it. Somebody's going to take care of that tomorrow night, please?
Yeah.
And a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion to adjourn, too.
Second.
Discussion. Kristen?
What are you going to suggest? It's going to go to the city attorney.
City attorney's going to clean it up. He's going to give us his top 20 by February 1st.
And I'll make the motion.
And we're actually going to have an opportunity to look at it, and will we know what changes are? Are we going to get a redline version, or are we just going to get a version, or what?
Jesse?
It will not include any changes. It will be current code. You'll get a separate list of what Mr. Tito, as planning manager, thinks might be appropriate changes.
Okay. It's a current approved code. You won't be able to tell what's changed from the 98 code.
It'll just be updated.
It'll be updated.
So okay. Then once we get that one, if we want to make
different
all matter. You're not going to do any typo corrections or anything?
It's current code.
Okay. There are errors in it. So I just wonder.
Oh.
If you use the wrong form of two?
We'll see on technical corrections, but it's still, whatever was adopted, and I don't know where these numbering, lettering errors came in because that didn't come out of our office. I would think that every ordinance the council adopted was correct.
Okay, motion on the floor to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.